Hey, welcome to Exposed Conferences. I'm your host, Christina Danielle. Thank you for tuning into the podcast where we're going to be exposing current trends, challenges, and the futures of conferences. As well, I'll be having candid conversations with industry experts that will elevate your events and help you create partnerships that expand beyond the calendar year. I'm really happy to have you listening today and hope you benefit from today's episode as well as future episodes. On today's episode, I'm talking with Aidan Augustine, the co-founder and president of Feather, a software company building marketing tools specifically tailored to the needs of event organizers and professional associations. Feather has helped almost 2,000 conference or trade shows grow attendance, engagement, and digital sponsorship revenue. Based out of their Gainesville, Florida headquarters, Aidan leads the state and marketing functions of Feather and spearheads industry engagement. He's an active member of both ASAE and IAEE, a volunteer with SEER, and is a regular speaker on the topics of programming, advertising, influencer marketing, and web analytics. Hi, Aidan. Welcome. It's such a pleasure to speak with you today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm so intrigued by your story and how you got started into the industry and the evolution of Feather. I remember meeting you several years ago when Feather was really just getting its name out there. And over the last few years, it's really just been blowing up everywhere. I see your messages pop up on my social media all the time. If you're able to just give us a sense of how you got into the event space and how Feather was developed.
Yeah. Like many professionals in the event industry, you know, Feather did not start out there. We kind of stumbled our way in and then found a home that we loved and have chosen to stay in. The original product that Feather tried to do was nothing to do with events. It was all about networking. So we were trying to kill paper business cards, believe it or not. So the very first product was a mobile app. We were trying to get the whole world to download the Feather app, and you could design your interactive digital business card on your phone, and then you could share it with people phone to phone. So if you remember the app called Bump, which was one of the first apps to really go viral on the Apple App Store. You could tap two phones together and it would swap contact info. So that was kind of what we were trying to replicate, except for we were also trying to automate all of the stuff that happens after you swap business cards. Can you automate sending a LinkedIn connection or sending a Twitter follow? Can you sync the contact with your contact list or with your CRM? Can you set a reminder? Can it sync with your calendar to make you follow up? Can it draft a follow-up email? So forth. So that was kind of the original vision for Feather, was to streamline not just the exchange of contact info, but the follow-up process. So what led us to events, just because so much networking and business card exchange takes place at conferences and at trade shows. And so at first we were just using events as a testbed to try to get distribution of our networking app. We would try to get everyone at first smaller networking events, and then we started partnering with larger events and conferences, trying to get them to distribute our app to the attendees. Because the classic chicken and egg situation was the main problem for us at that time, right? So it was much more difficult for me to share my digital card from my app to you if you didn't have the app installed. So it was only useful if we both had it. How do you kind of get the whole world to download it? Well, you cheat that process by getting a significant portion of attendees at an event to download the app ahead of time. So anyway, that was kind of how Feather started rushing the event industry. And then as we partnered with more conferences and trade shows, they started asking, hey, I love this interactivity for my attendees, but I would love it more if it also had the schedule, or if it also had the map, or if it also had speaker information, and I want to send push notifications out. And so we kind of backed our way into building fairly standard, full-featured event app. So we still had the attendee networking component. And I like to think that we were one of the first people to really do that and do that reasonably well, because this is in 2012, 2013. By the end of 2013, we were just another conference trade show mobile app vendor among the dozens that we all know and love. Yeah, so that's kind of the backstory of how we ended up in the event industry. And then, of course, many conference event organizers wanted to have it white labeled, have it custom branded. So that was chapter two of Feather, was fully moving away from the Feather app that the whole world would download and fully committing to this approach of building dedicated apps that would be stuck in the app store or custom branded for each individual event. And then building conference apps for about 150 different events over 2013 to 2014. And that's what led us to the modern era of Feather, because we realized so many of our customers kept asking, hey, this app is great, but can I use it to somehow promote the event ahead of time and grow my attendance in advance? Can I get more registrations? Or they would say, can I keep using the app post-event to keep my attendees engaged? Can I use the app to somehow have digital sponsorship revenue, particularly associations that had year-round membership activities beyond the event? But even others, even independent event organizers, wanted to have some type of year-round engagement for their attendees post and monetize it. So those three things, pre-event promotion to get more attendees, post-event engagement to keep the attendees engaged, and then sponsorship promotion and monetization just kept coming up. And the mobile app wasn't really designed for those things. These mobile apps are not really, they're primarily for attendees to use at the event itself. That's kind of what led us to the modern era of Feather, which is kind of like 2015 onwards, which is a marketing suite, a digital marketing suite. So after kind of doing all these customer interviews and understanding the needs more, just found this opportunity to help conference and trade show organizers leverage some of the, you know, more modern, more digital, more data-driven marketing channels that were starting to become common in other B2B industries, but had not fully been adopted yet in the conference trade show organizer space. So that's kind of the story of how we got to where we are today and what we did the last 4.5 years.
That's awesome. I mean, you guys have really created a product that has changed the game for conference organizers and how we run our events. And it really empowered planners to easily create personalized event experiences through data insights and communication. I think one of the biggest challenges as a conference organizer is building relationships and continuing those relationships. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you've been able to help organizers begin to form those relationships and then how your clients are then using the data that they've collected?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, the touch points that we focus on are all the pre-event touch points with the website. And that's part of the contention we would make, is that the event experience really begins not when they show up on site and not even when they're in the middle of registration, but all the way back to when is the first touch point online. Did they visit your website? Did they open an email that you sent them? Did they see a social post from you online? So that's really where the experience begins, because that's the brand experience of your event, even if it's long before the actual in-person component. So step one is just tracking that. What are people doing online? Are they visiting your site? How often are they coming back? Which pages are they visiting? How long did they spend on the site? Are they coming from mobile devices, or, you know, are they full screen on a computer, and so forth? So insights into what digital touch points are happening is really the first step of that process. And then once you start gathering that data, you can start seeing some patterns emerge, and you can create segments and say, okay, well, give me all of the people who have been to my website on a mobile device at least twice in the last 30 days. Now that's a group. And then let's slice that another way. Give me the people who have been to the why should I attend page as opposed to the why exhibit page, right? So that's kind of a standard split in the website. Almost every event will have some kind of why attend section as well as some kind of why sponsor or why exhibit section. You can split your audience in that way. The people who have been to that why should I sponsor page multiple times, they're almost certainly potential sponsors, right? And they keep, you know, viewing those pages and reading that. Maybe they've downloaded the prospectus, and you could track all that. And that would be a very different cohort than the people who keep looking at the why should I attend page. But yeah, so yeah, once you get the visibility into what's happening, and once you have the ability to slice that information and see, oh wow, there's 10,000 people that have been to the why exhibit page at least twice in the last 30 days on a mobile device, right? You might not have realized that, or you might not have realized that when you drill into which, let's say you have a conference with multiple tracks, which track is getting the most attention, right? So if you have track A, B, and C, and your website is clearly split up in that manner, and you can kind of click into those different sections of the agenda, is there just three times as much site traffic going to the track C section of the website, and people are coming back to that section repeatedly? And that's an interesting insight that you might need to know. Or if it's even site traffic among all three, you still might want to track those three groups differently. You know, if people are kind of raising their hand and saying, this is what I'm interested in, by virtue of the fact that they've visited that page multiple times, there's an opportunity to use that, to leverage that information as part of the way you communicate with that. So now, kind of closing the loop, once you have the information, once you've seen the insights, once you've created the audience segments, the next step is to market to that person, right? So digital marketing through various channels. The main channel that, you know, we support on this front would be what's called programmatic advertising, which is essentially ads that follow you around the internet, right? So everyone's had this experience of looking at, you know, products on Amazon or some other kind of e-commerce shopping website, and you put it in your cart and then you don't buy it, and then ads for that exact pair of shoes, you know, show up in your Facebook newsfeed.
Others have been following me around the last few days.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so we certainly do this, you know, for our own website and for things like that. And this is what we help our customers do for their events. So you would be able to run these hyper-targeted, personalized campaigns based on the behavior that specific person has exhibited, or that cohort of site visitors has exhibited. So if they, you know, the 3,000 people that looked at track A versus the 2,000 people who have looked at track C, you might want to market to them with different messages. Another thing here is you can see who has engaged with the website but not actually registered yet, right? So there's people have not made their purchase of their conference pass, so they haven't registered for the show yet, but again, they've engaged with multiple points on the website. You can now re-engage them, retarget them with ads that are specific to whatever they've expressed the most interest in. And so the keynote speakers, or rather the breakouts of track A, you know, those would be the speakers you would highlight when retargeting the people who have spent most time on that section of the website, whereas the speakers of the workshops in track C, you know, those are the people you would highlight when running a retargeting campaign to that cohort of website visitors. Yeah, so long-winded, but that's kind of how we would say you can begin your personalized journey, your personalized event experience far in advance of the event itself through these digital marketing touch points, tracking it, what's already happening organically, and then giving them a little extra nudge when, you know, organically they're not coming back to register or they're taking a longer time than you might like. That's the point of retargeting, is kind of gets you back top of mind.
Absolutely. I think retargeting is so critical in events. And then just concept of cross promotion and how huge of an asset that can be in the event space. Because now that you have eyes, so to speak, on what pages your attendees are viewing, you can now target them to other shows, other platforms of your website. And potentially, if somebody's like looking at the exhibit and sponsorship page, you could potentially target them to then be a sponsor of your event. You know, I can't really speak for anybody but my own company. And what we're seeing specifically is a transition from traditional sponsorship more towards sponsorships that the company can get more data on the number of impressions that they're seeing, or just more data that they can take back to their organizations. And so it would be interesting to kind of get that information and insight into what they're looking at on the website is from a sponsorship perspective. And it leads to this bigger concept of using the data that you're receiving to then target your viewer for other areas on your website that they might not necessarily be familiar with, but that they might be interested in because of what you're seeing in their behavior patterns.
Yeah, there's a few things in that. So on the cross-promotion piece, and this is especially relevant for associations that have many other offerings throughout the year for their members beyond the big annual meeting or the big annual show. So for example, many associations, continuing education is a key part of their offering and also a key part of their revenue. And so you can use the data from when I was registering for an event or when I was browsing the event website. And I was looking at track C, and track C is on the topic of operations management. I'm just making this up, but whatever it might be, you could then, after the event is over, retarget those same individuals who had expressed interest in that topic at the event with the upcoming continuing education courses around that same topic. That type of cross promotion of, well, on the website for the event, you were looking at these things. So now a month later, I'm going to retarget you to drive you not back to the event website. So kind of retargeting 101 is people leave and you drive them back to the same site. But this kind of cross promotion idea is, well, we want to make sure we nudge them to this other section of the association's website where they have not been. You can create a segment that's like, well, who has been to the event website and they expressed interest in these topics at the event, but has never even looked at the webinars section of our association's website or the, you know, continuing education online section of the website, that we want to create that segment and we want to nudge them in that direction. So that's another interesting use case. But even for independent show organizers, maybe they have other events throughout the year that are in the same vein, right? So if they have an East and a West version of the same show, or they might have one big trade show, but then they also have smaller conferences in that same vertical, which is often the case among these larger, you know, independent organizers. That's another use case for cross promotion. Or also a trend we've seen is many independent show organizers, even if they don't necessarily have traditional media like magazines anymore, some of them are starting to look at online content portals, a new version of media, a new version of publications. This is kind of like purely digital portal that has articles and has research and has maybe even a forum component or has webinars series and so forth. And so that's another opportunity for cross promotion, even outside the association kind of member use case. You mentioned the sponsor bit. So I'm curious to hear, you know, your thoughts on that, around which the trend towards sponsors and exhibitors asking for either more quantifiable ROI, and how does that manifest, or, you know, moving away from some of the more traditional pure awareness types of sponsorships and wanting something a little bit more measurable, coming under pressure there from their boss, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're definitely seeing a big transition. So we really showcase the conference as three phases of the event. So really the pre-show, the on-site, and the post-show. And so a lot of companies are coming to us, and our organization itself is looking at what types of things can we do to have them leaving feeling like they're not just having their logo splashed up on a sign. We offer them opportunities like our enhanced digital listing, which is an upgraded app listing. We offer them our attendee mail list, where they can send a direct mail piece to our attendees, letting them know that they're going to be at this show, prior to the show. So that's kind of the pre-conference stage. And then, of course, there's the sponsorship, the on-site aspect, where you go into more of the sponsorship that is visible at the venue and that is more tangible. And so for those sponsorships, absolutely, we are seeing a transition. So moving away from something like a coffee break to something where they can actually see the data behind it. So the things that come to mind are the mobile app. So how many times was the app downloaded? How many people clicked on the banner that then led to their website? How many impressions did they have overall? Another big sponsorship that we've seen increased interest in is the shuttle buses. Because again, shuttle buses, you're able to give them the number of routes that the shuttle buses had. How many shuttle buses were there? How much signage was there on the route that the sponsorship was able to brand? Another thing that we've seen too is a transition towards experiential sponsorships. So something where they have more of an opportunity to create an experience with an attendee. So do this thing called a pop-up photo booth where the attendees can go and have their picture taken, and they are able to create a customized message. They can get the number of impressions that the attendees saw their message and saw their logo, and then are able to go back and report that. And again, going back to that measurable data. And at the end of the conference, we typically provide them with, again, additional promotional opportunities to follow up with the attendees. So we offer a post-conference attendee list where they're able to send a direct mail piece to a larger list of attendees because more people have registered than when they received the original pre-conference list. And then they're able to reach out and follow up to those attendees, reminding them of what they saw on site and reminding them of their participation at the show. And it's just a nice way to kind of wrap up the conference as they prepare and start to think of the next year's event. And so really what our company tries to do is give them plenty of opportunities from the very end of the previous year through the entire conference cycle to reach out to the attendee and engage with them. And letting them know this is not just a 3, 4, 5 day event. This is really your opportunity to connect and engage with the attendees. And again, giving them those three phases of the show to do so.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that you're explicitly pitching to the sponsor. There's a 3-phase marketing campaign, right? That's one way you could look at it, right? 3-phase experience and the pre and post show. Even if they don't have necessarily fully equal weight just yet, it's a trend that probably will keep moving, but still at least explicitly identifying them, like this is part of the way you need to think about this and a part of the way you think about your presence and your activation and your ROI. That's awesome.
And it's definitely, again, it's just something we've been seeing more and more of. And so what are some of the other ways that you've seen with your experience in the industry, how people can start using the digital marketing piece to initiate a 365 event experience?
Yeah. So, I mean, starting with sponsor activations, you know, very much in the vein of what you just said, the same technology, you know, of programmatic advertising, right? And retargeting of ads that are personalized based on your website behavior. You know, earlier, the examples I was giving were all about an organizer or an association, you know, retargeting its audience to drive more attendance at the event, right? Or to drive post-event engagement and with teaching education. But the same capability can be used to promote sponsors or exhibitors, pre-show and post-show, exactly like you described. So that's one thing that's definitely on the rise where, in addition to using these retargeting capabilities for your own promotion, you could create a package and sell it to an exhibitor saying, hey, don't you want your ads to be retargeted to all of the registered attendees for the 4 weeks leading up to the show? And so then all of the attendees who had completed registration would start seeing ads follow them around, again, onto their news sites and to their social media feeds and so forth. But rather than it saying like, you know, click here to register for the event or early bird pricing or whatever it might be, they've already registered, so they wouldn't be seeing those ads. They would now be seeing ads from a specific sponsor or exhibitor. And so the sponsor exhibitor is now paying for a pre-event package or a post-event package or both, that 4 weeks leading up to the show, their ads are retargeted to the attendees, and those ads can say things very specific to whatever activation they have at the event. all the attendees would see ads. Click here to RSVP to our private party, or click here to schedule a one-on-one demo of our latest, you know, product offerings at the booth. Or maybe they are just awareness ads, but the ads say, we're looking forward to seeing you, and actually you stop by the booth number 123. So that type of hyper-targeted, multi-touch, digital drip, if you want to call it that, that's part of the beauty of retargeting, is that these ads can kind of like follow you around over the course of multiple days, multiple touch points, and you don't necessarily expect people to click them immediately. It's more just a top of mind kind of thing. That time slot of the weeks leading up to the event, it's just like prime time. And with this digital targeting capability, you can show the exact ad you want to the exact people you want in that exact time period right before the event itself. So that's something that's definitely starting to get some traction. You know, for some of our customers, they've been able to drive significant new digital revenue off of this type of sale, and also add kind of like novel value to their exhibitors and sponsors who, you know, like you said, maybe are not as satisfied as they used to be with some of the standard brand awareness in a vague way type of activations at the event. Even if they're doing that, it's just an extension pre-event, and then same idea post-event for the 4 weeks immediately after the event, right? They would continue to see those ads from a specific sponsor.
Absolutely. And the personalization of the event for the websites, you know, having personalized ads kind of following you around, people don't just want to be one other person in a sea of 23,000 or whatever the event size is. They really want things personalized to them, you know, kind of like you see at Starbucks with them writing your name and all those special touch points. And so the same thing is the transition of events and how we can make those experiences more personalized, even in a large event experience.
Yeah, and that's definitely the challenge with a large event. The only way you can deliver personalization at scale is it has to be some amount of automated and data driven. If you have a 10,000 person trade show, much less a 30,000 person trade show, there's just no way that you can manually create a personalized experience for every attendee. The only way that's going to happen is it's got to have some type of automated component that's leveraging. Whether it's the data like Feather tracks of their online behavior, touch points on the website and so forth. Maybe it's the data that's explicitly input during registration. And if they say, I'm interested in these product categories and I have this buying power and I am a previous attendee from 3 of the last 5 years, kind of leveraging data like that to cohort people. I think that's something that's readily at our fingertips. And then, something that hasn't quite been done well yet, but I know various companies and organizers are working on it. It was really connecting the dots of all of those things feeding into maybe a mobile app or a smart badge such that you actually like different suggestions are served up to you. I think there's some holy grail there somewhere. I mean, whether it's matchmaking of like, here are the exhibitors you should go see, or here are the people you should meet, or here are the sessions you should see. And, it's intelligently tailored just for you. There have been various attempts at it. I don't know that anyone's really got it right yet. I think that's a frontier that seems like it's within reach, but I don't know. People have been saying that for several years now. I don't know. What do you think on that front? Have you seen anybody do that type of data-driven personalization in the form of whether an app or a matchmaking system that has really moved the needle?
Yeah, so we actually do see that quite a bit with event apps. I know right now there are a few apps that we've used, again, just within different conferences that I've worked on, where they've started doing more of the attendee matchmaking, where they match attendees based on the sessions or the tracks that they're going to. They can update their profiles so that they can specify what topics they're interested in, what speakers they're interested in seeing. And then for exhibitors and sponsors, we're starting to see a little bit more of that. I know there's a company we're looking at right now. They actually have a product in the platform that allows sponsors to now connect with attendees based on, again, what types of information they're looking for on connecting them, not only pre-show, but also on site as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a number of things going on. It'll be interesting to see how they all unfold. One that I particularly like is called Grip. They're a UK-based company. They're still fairly small, but they've definitely worked with a few hundred conferences at this point, and they have a pretty slick user interface, very easy for the attendee to use. It's loosely in the vein of the Tinder, kind of like thumbs up, thumbs down, or swipe left or right. Is this person interesting to you? But the suggestions are pretty good. So they're working on something that's pretty interesting. The thing with them and many others, it's like if a registration company had a matchmaking thing, then they could, the data's already in there, right? That's definitely an annoying thing as an attendee when you feel like you're entering the same information or very similar information multiple times, right? Like, I already filled this out during registration. Why is the mobile app asking me for the same things, right? And so unless you can like pull the data through from the reg into the mobile app and those, or the, whatever the matchmaking tool is, and kind of apply it, you're asking people to do somewhat redundant work. And of course, the more work you ask an attendee to do, or the more data you ask them to input, the less likely they're going to do it. So attendee adoption is always a challenge. Data, you know, from different systems to talk to each other or to flow through or into one central place.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a challenge we have too. So yeah, getting all that information in one place and having it all kind of filtered together. So what are you seeing down the pipeline?
On the marketing side, I do think there's a lot of opportunity to leverage the data collected at the event throughout the year. I think right now there's still a strong tendency or common tendency among event organizers to treat the lead up to the event, you know, the promotion of the event, the attendee acquisition efforts, as like one giant standalone effort. And then like whatever other marketing they do throughout the year is kind of totally separate, as opposed to viewing it as a 365 relationship with an attendee. Sometimes that's because they're literally separate teams. So that's one challenge. That's more of a personnel or organizational structure challenge. If you have one team who's responsible for butts and seats at the event, and you have a different team that's responsible for, you know, other year-round marketing or member engagement or kind of like content engagement. So marketing is just becoming more technical and more digital and more analytical across the board, right? This has nothing to do with the event industry. This is like a 10-year trend, you know, far beyond the event industry. So we track this infographic from this website called chiefmartech.com. It's a blog about marketing technology. And they have this infographic they put out each year, which every logo of every marketing technology company. So it's this infographic that got very crowded very quick. In 2011, it had something like 150 or 200 logos on it, and they broke it into categories. In 2015, it was 2,000. And then 2018, it was almost 7,000 logos. So it's just crazy explosion. So over almost 7,000 different marketing technology products and companies are on the market right now. So like it's just so much more happening, and that reflects kind of like the rapid, not just digitization, but like really like a lot of this stuff is around, you know, analytics and the technical components of marketing. So that is another challenge. I think the event industry is a little bit slower to adopt technology, and also reflective of that, dedicated technical roles are quite few and far between, right? It's very uncommon that an event organizer or an association will have like someone with data science or data analyst skills, or in many cases, a dedicated digital marketer of any kind. And even within digital marketing, you know, email marketing is an entire skill set, as is, you know, like search and social paid advertising is an entire skill set. People build whole professions around that. And so an ideal marketing team would have like this group of specialists, but that's often not the case within the event world. You know, there's a marketing team that are generalists, and they have to kind of shoulder the burden of everything from branding to website to email communications, PR about the event. There's just so much poured on the plate of the marketing team or the marketer, you know, at a small association where there's just one person, that it's very difficult to learn and acquire the new skills maybe that are becoming more common in other industries. So I think that's a challenge just industry-wide and will need to be overcome at some point. But when the skill sets are in place and the tools are in place, the ability to personalize marketing and communication in 2019, 2020, I mean, it's already pretty powerful. It's quite phenomenal. I think it's just going to take a little bit more time.
I mean, your company has pivoted so many times over the last few years and has now partnered with one of the world's leading brand experience companies. Can you talk to us about that shift since your partnership and what you've been seeing from organizations as they're trying to create more of a brand experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So Freeman, you know, we're happy and proud to say, is an investor in Feather. So Freeman participated in one of our first major funding rounds like 3 years ago, and they've continued to participate since then. So they are a, you know, minority shareholder and investor in Feather as a company. And then also we have a partnership with them where, you know, we've done some collaborative work with their customers, with their digital marketing services team. So they have now, and of course, Freeman also just acquired MDG, and MDG was our primary agency partner as well, which is now again part of Freeman. So there's a couple of different things that we've done with Freeman. You know, one is working with their agency arm, especially now with MDG being part of it, and helping those groups bring Feather's technology to their teams and giving like an extra level of support and training with them. Other things we've done with them, you know, we've done some joint education and joint, you know, kind of thought leadership activities, whether it's webinars or some other pieces, you know, with them. So that's all been fun stuff. And we're really excited about continuing to grow that relationship. And it's been very impressive to see Freeman's dedication to technology and digital enhancements of their core offerings over the last few years. So they've acquired a handful of software companies. They've invested in a handful of software companies like Feather. They acquired MDG, which is the leading digital marketing agency in our space. So yeah, it's all been super exciting stuff. I think that's reflective of their bet that this is a growing opportunity and necessity, you know, for events to deliver a better experience. You know, their bet on technology and digital as an enhancement to the event itself. That's always important to say, like, nobody is saying maybe 10 years ago or 15 years ago when people were worried about virtual trade shows killing the industry and things like that. Nobody's saying that now. Everybody is really talking about enhancements to the live experience, right? Personalizing the live experience, but using tools, you know, like website behavior analytics or like data analytics tools or business intelligence tools where you have data that can connect the dots between your CRM and your registration and your website analytics and your mobile app to flow that through so that the on-site experience is better. Whatever better means. Better could mean saving you time. It could mean making you meet the right person or go to the right session or learn the right thing. And then, you know, as a recurring theme in this conversation, extending the experience, yeah, pre-event and post-event in a manner that's also personalized in the form of whatever digital marketing or communication that you're doing. So beyond that, there's also some opportunity around influencer marketing. You know, influencer marketing in the context of an event, in some ways, is something that the event industry has done for a long time, particularly on the exhibitor side, right? You have exhibitors at your show. They're already stakeholders of the show. Those exhibitors are influencers, right? They're companies in the industry that have a following. They have their own site traffic. They have their own following on social media. They have their own email lists, right? So can you leverage your exhibitors to help promote the event? And that's something that's been common for a long time, just was never really called influencer marketing. Bringing some of the things that have made influencer marketing explode in on the other side of the fence, you know, in more the consumer world, the fact that social has so much more robust engagement activity now and following, and most people are on social, as well as just measurability. I mean, those two things have really have made influencer marketing blow up elsewhere. And I think there's a chance to like revitalize, you know, the traditional form of exhibitor or sponsor co-promotion in the event world by bringing some of those influencer marketing concepts in. And personalization applies here as well, because by giving every influencer, whether that's a sponsor or exhibiting company, or it's a speaker at a conference, by giving them kind of a personalized media kit of collateral that they can share, that's something that we've seen have lift over some of the more like traditional forms of trying to get exhibitors or speakers to, you know, share a promo code, but it's something kind of generic, or giving them all a banner that says, you know, I'm proud to be a speaker at this event, or, you know, I'm proud to be an exhibitor at this event, but again, it's like one generic banner that's the same for everybody. If you could give every speaker their own kind of vanity microsite, you know, a webpage that puts them front and center, I'm proud to be a speaker, has their headshot, has their session information and so forth, or same thing for an exhibitor. If every exhibitor had their own vanity microsite that had their logo right next to the show logo, proud to be a sponsor, come see us at booth 123, you know, a little bit of information about them, and personalizing that kind of like vanity collateral that they can share pre-event to promote the fact that they're a proud sponsor or supporter or speaker at the experience. That's another form of personalization that's not really of the attendee experience, but that's a way to give more value to these key stakeholders, these key influencers who are already involved.
I love that idea. Where I'm at currently, we do the banner where we do, I'm an exhibitor, I'm a sponsor, but I love the idea of making it more personalized to the stakeholder.
For speakers, the majority of speakers are speakers at companies in the industry, whether they're attendee side or they're on the supplier side or some mix of both. Either way, they're individuals, probably executives at companies in the space. They probably have a boatload of connections on LinkedIn of their peers, mm-hmm. you know, at companies in the space. And so if you got suddenly dozens of these influential people all share, you know, their personalized links onto their LinkedIn, then suddenly, you know, people who have connections to multiple of those people would start seeing show up multiple times. Oh, if this event keeps popping up and these people I know and respect are all saying they're going, or they're all saying they're speaking at it, yeah, that's going to pop up on their feed, and that's going to jog their action. So it just adds credibility, and the fact that it's just so much more measurable now, like you can see, well, how many people clicked that link from that social post? How many people viewed that page? How many people clicked off of that page to the registration? And then how many people actually finished registration? So you can kind of track every step of the process. You can see where the drop-offs are. You can also then reward the right speakers, the right exhibitors and sponsors for pulling their weight, or whoever drove the most. You can give some type of incentive, and it's all very measurable because it's all, you know, online through these, you know, digital channels. So that's definitely something that we've seen strong response.
I love the idea of making it an incentive. So creating a game around it, making it a little bit of fun, a little bit challenging, and then rewarding the exhibitor or the speaker. Maybe they get a discount towards registration the next year, or a discount off of their booth, complimentary registration list, just something like that. Yeah, I could see a lot of people participating in that. I love that idea.
Where do you see Feather evolving to, or what other products are you working on?
So a number of different things. So one expansion of Feather, not so much on the technology side, but as part of our offering over the last year, was we started offering services because we realized that many of our customers, I mean, getting back to what we talked about earlier of bandwidth and marketing teams having to be generalists because they have so much on their plate, or just, you know, from a budget standpoint, not having the luxury of having specialists or data analysts or, you know, digital marketing experts and so forth. So anyway, that's something we've started offering over the last year. Is we now have what we call the Feather Concierge team. And so we have a team within Feather, which is essentially a micro agency. So we, right now, we only do implementation of our own product, but, you know, we have the option where we can design the ads and we can create the segments and we'll review all the analytics data and we'll design the campaigns and we'll do the A/B testing and the optimization and run all of those data-driven programmatic advertising campaigns for a customer. So that's something new that we're continuing to expand. And same thing, you know, on the, you know, exhibitor, sponsor, speaker side of the house, you know, like where we can design those personalized collateral pieces and we can design the templates and we can, you know, shoulder the burden of distribution to the speakers and exhibitors and get them engaged with their vanity collateral. So that's one way we've already expanded over the last year, and we're going to continue expanding, is offering more services, you know, still very narrowly scoped to implementation of our own products. Potentially we would expand beyond that in the future. Also, product development wise, I mean, we have multiple new things in the works there. So one that we're most excited about, we call it Flight Paths, but essentially we're trying to make a full marketing plan in a box of the digital channels that Feather supports. So rather than needing to create, you know, six different retargeting campaigns separately, we would have a pre-made like marketing plan template where you would say, oh, I'm a trade show and my event is this far out and I have this much money to spend. And we say, here are the six campaigns we would recommend. So like automatically creating drafts of the six campaigns just to save customers time, help them implement best practices. We're kind of building that into the product now, but just trying to share best practices, save our customers time, and build into the product like pre-made marketing plans that you can select from. Even if you edit it from there, at least you're not starting from scratch every time. That would be especially useful for customers that run multiple events per year, because they could save their own marketing plan as a template and they could just one click to clone it for the next year, or for the, you know, the every 6 months, if they have an East show and a West show, they could clone the same marketing plan. So that's one major product update that we have planned. And some other exciting things, I mean, adding additional marketing channels, you know, different digital channels as part of the marketing mix. So right now, you know, our main channels are the programmatic advertising components, the influencer marketing components, and then website analytics and some on-website engagement types of things like pop-ups on the website that have specific questions and things like that. But we're considering, you know, adding much more robust social media management components. So where you could do social campaigns out of Feather, potentially to include organic social posts, like scheduling posts ahead of time. Whereas right now we only do paid campaigns on Facebook and Instagram, and even that is fairly limited at this time. So expansion into more social things, as well as potentially Google search. So right now, Google search is a major part of many digital marketing campaigns, and Feather doesn't currently support Google search campaigns. So like pulling that into Feather and integrating it with the rest of the suite and having everything play nice together, that's another area we might add. And then maybe email marketing. Email marketing is a big, hairy thing, and everybody's already entrenched with one email marketing provider or another. So that's why we've stayed away from it. But I would say as part of the long-term vision for Feather, we would like to be that one marketing suite for all of the digital marketing channels that are relevant to event promotion or year-round audience engagement. And email marketing is obviously a critical part of that, which is not done within Feather right now. So those are some of the product development plans, just adding additional marketing channels. in addition to flight paths, which is more of like a user experience change that should, you know, make life
easier. Yeah, awesome. Sounds like you have a lot going on and you're a busy guy.
No rest for
the wicked. Exactly. So I recently did a kind of a speed round game with some quick questions, and I'll try not to throw too many curveballs at you.
All right.
So where did the name Feather come from?
Birds of a feather flock together, and the original product was that networking tool to bring people together. That's where the name came from, and we've just kept it.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned about the industry?
That's a good one. One of the ones that jumps out, I would say, is a sense of like humility and being humble, in that I think when we came in, like many young entrepreneurs, you know, 5-6 years ago, I think we thought we had all of the answers, and we thought we were going to come in from, you know, outside the industry and disrupt the whole thing because we knew what was necessary. And I think we had a very humbling experience, which was very healthy, which was your customers are what matters. Listen to your customers, understand your customers. Don't force your solution down their throats. Understand their actual needs and tailor to that. So I don't know necessarily that that's, you know, purely the case within the event industry. I'm sure, I think that's probably more of an entrepreneurial lesson, but in our case, it was learning that lesson about the event industry. And I think we came in with a bit more hubris and have learned a lot and are much more humble and customer centric now than we were maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So that's been a very healthy experience.
I think that's a great one. What's your favorite thing about the industry?
So I'd say personally, like the opportunity to travel so many places to meet with our customers, sometimes going to the shows of our customers, going to industry events within the event industry. That's been very exciting for me personally. Additionally, I would say the exposure to so many industries, right? So because Feather's industry is, you know, event organizers and associations, but every event and every association is catered to a very separate industry, right? And the diversity of our customers now, because we've worked with, you know, almost 2,000 conferences and events and over 400 associations that are now active customers and so forth. So we have everything from International Liquid Terminals Association to the American Urology Association, National Association of Home Builders, to, you know, Wisconsin Medical Society, and just, you know, and everything in between. There's probably some more, even more crazy niche ones in there. So just the breadth of industries that we get exposed to by helping them market and helping them tell their story. That's fairly unique, you know, to this space, because it's kind of a horizontal industry, yeah, right? You know, across so many other industry verticals.
Awesome. So this one's going to sound a little bit funny, but what keeps you up at night?
So, you know, we're still a startup, I guess. Actually, I heard the cool new phrase for what Feather would be called now is a scale up. So we are past the startup phase, but we are still in, you know, like hyper growth mode. So we are a scale up now is what you'd call Feather. But, you know, just the startup entrepreneurial roller coaster, you know, it's up, down, and sideways. And even now, you know, where we are, we have 60 employees and we have, like I said, over 400, 500 customers. You'd think if you'd asked me like 3 years ago to describe where we are now, it's like, oh, you've made it, right? You're there. You're a real company. But like now that we're there, you know, there's always some new challenge, right? Whether it's growing pains of trying to, I mean, how do you hire 50 people a year, because that's what we're trying to hire over the course of 2019. When we're enter the year as a 50-person company, we're going to end the year as a 100-person company. How do you even do that? How do you maintain the same caliber of customer service while growing so quickly? You know, it used to be that I knew every single customer that we had, and I knew the names of our main points of contact personally. And obviously, we're long since past the point where that's feasible. Now we need to build systems and processes and, we're large enough that HR, in terms of just different divisions, and, you know, we're starting to get those separate silos, right? That's inevitable just as you scale up and you have separate departments of the company. And so I'd say all those challenges related to maintaining the same quality of customer experience that Feather has a very positive reputation for in the industry, while dealing with just the startup pressures and the scale up pressures that come with being a, you know, fast growing company. That's the area.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's interesting and very honest. And last one, favorite karaoke song. I saw that on your LinkedIn profile.
I was going to ask. Yeah, I happen to be a huge fan of karaoke. So I would say my entry to karaoke, I'll give two answers. My first one that was my go-to song when I first came to karaoke was Lose Yourself by Eminem.
Good one. So,
the iconic rap song. I would say favorite one to sing is more of an oldie, which is Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. So, and particularly if my girlfriend is in the vicinity, kind of personalizing, there you go, the song to her and replacing her name with, you know, the I love you, baby, but putting her name in the slot to embarrass her in front of the crowd. So that's probably my favorite ones.
Right. Well, that's a good one and great answer. Thank you for sharing all of that.
How about you? Can I put you on the spot real quick before we finish up here?
Right now, my favorite song to sing in my car is ladies in the 90s. And that I believe is Lauren Elena. So love that. Awesome. Yeah. Well, awesome, Aiden. Thank you so much for taking the time today and letting us get to know you a little bit more. And again, you have an incredible story that I'm just so thankful for you, you know, sitting down with us. You've changed really the way that conference planners connect with our stakeholders in the industry. And so I wish you many more successes in your career.
Well, thank you so much once again for the kind words and for having me on the show. This was a great time. Looking forward to listening to the rest of the series.
Thank you for listening to Expose. Tune in every Tuesday to hear a new episode and join in on the conversation at ExposeConferencesPodcast.buzzsprout.com.